once a Labour stronghold.
After Nigel Farage challenged the Prime Minister to meet him for a pint at a working men's club in the Red Wall, I went to Sedgefield to find out who the British people really want to have a drink with. I'm Phoebe Abbott-Zazy, reporting for LBC.
So what would you say if you found Nigel Farage in your local boozer? And what are the claims? The number's up. He doesn't know his abacus from his arithmetic. In other exclusive news on LBC...
The parents of a baby boy who died aged 15 weeks have told LBC they believe mould in their flat contributed to his death. I'm LBC's Helen Hoddenott with the exclusive.
Police working on the theory that the Liverpool parade driver was high on drugs. And on that subject, the move to decriminalise small amounts of cannabis. You'll hear from the politician backing that, Charlie, now Lord Faulkner. It's all after the 7 o'clock news on LBC.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 7 o'clock, the parents of a baby boy who died aged 15 weeks have told LBC they believe the mould in their home contributed to his death. Akram had been living in a London flat deemed uninhabitable by an independent survey. An inquest will take place in August. Savas Panas from the Pillion Trust, which helps disadvantaged people, had raised concerns about the state of the flat.
Everything that I could get, we forwarded on to say, we're not playing a game. This is dangerous. This is serious. Please, please, please prioritise this family.
Notting Hill Genesis, which managed the property, says it's deeply saddened by the tragic loss of Akram. It says it's working with the relevant authorities as they conduct investigations, and it would be inappropriate to comment further ahead of the inquest. A driver is still in custody after he was arrested on suspicion of attempted murder at Liverpool's Trophy Parade. Merseyside police believe the car which hit pedestrians was able to follow an ambulance into the restricted area on Monday. 65 people were injured, 11 of whom remain in hospital. Police and security chiefs are calling for extra resources to respond to prison reforms in England and Wales. They've written to the Ministry of Justice to warn of a threat to public safety by releasing some inmates after a third of their sentence. It was one of the recommendations of a newly published review. It was led by the former Justice Secretary, David Gawk, who spoke to Nick last week.
If we go forward another couple of years, we're not just running out of places, we're running out of places in a pretty big way. You know, 9,500 more people projected to be sentenced to prison and should be in prison than we have places.
Sir Sadiq Khan has backed calls for the possession of small quantities of natural cannabis to be decriminalised. London's mayor says a report by the independent London Drugs Commission shows the current rules cannot be justified. The Home Office says it has no intention of reclassifying cannabis. Smaller house builders could benefit from plans to speed up developments in England. Ministers are looking at easing environmental rules that force developers to compensate for any loss of nature. They'll set out a series of proposals to cut red tape later. In the city, the FTSE 100 will reopen this morning at 87.78 after closing up 60 yesterday. The pound buys $1.35 and €1.19. LBC weather, sunny spells and showers for most, feeling quite warm in the sunshine, a high of 22 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Thomas Watt.
Got an unexpected message, phone call or email that claims to be from HMRC? Take care. It could be a criminal pretending to be us. To protect yourself, never rush to share personal information or part with your money. Learn to recognise signs of a scam, such as being put under pressure to share bank details. And if something seems fishy, report it to HMRC straight away by searching HMRC Scams on gov.uk. Protect, recognise, report.
This is LBC from Global. Leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Good morning. 3 minutes after seven, Wednesday, May the 28th. Is there something wrong with Nigel Farage and his plans? The numbers don't seem to add up. We'll be speaking with a leading economist and then going to his suggestion how it would go down if he was walking to a working class, working man's, working woman's pub with Sir Keir Starmer in the north. Well, never mind that. I don't care whether it's in the north or it's in the south, the east, the west, wherever. What would your reaction be if Nigel Farage and some of his merry band were to walk into your pub? What would you say to him as we do look at the economic background to that? To the horror of the Liverpool parade and the theory that the driver could have been taking drugs, Assistant Chief Constable Jenny Sims is with Merseyside Police.
It is believed the driver of the Ford Galaxy car involved in this incident was able to follow an ambulance onto Water Street.
Time to stop the students coming to the US. President Trump calling for Harvard to rein in the number of foreign applications.
Part of the problem with Harvard is that there are about 31%, almost 31% of foreigners coming to Harvard. We have Americans that want to go there and they can't go there.
Back in the UK, it's not a fair cop. A number of leading police chiefs, indeed. The Commissioner of the Met and other major forces warned the Prime Minister, pledges require more cash. We simply can't deliver. Staying with cash if you live in, work in or drive into London, get ready for a 20% lift in congestion charge. 20%? Have you had that kind of pay rise? I very much doubt that. Also,
West Dulwich residents became the first in the country to defeat the council over a low-traffic neighbourhood. But what could that mean for other LTNs? I'm LBC's Henry Riley with the details.
Plus the details, and I will give you a listener warning, a devastating story exclusive to LBC, parents claiming that a mould-ridden flat contributed to the death of their baby. You'll have more on that later in the show.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 60 60 973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
As I often say with political promises, what's not to like? It's the turn of Reform UK's Nigel Farage to say that tax-free personal allowance will be up, transferable tax allowance will be made available for married couples, he'll scrap the two-child benefit, on and on and on it went. It was like a giveaway game show, everything you wanted to hear. But hold on a second. Do the numbers add up? Well, it's the most policy-laden intervention since winning his seat, of course, in the July election. He took to the stage in London yesterday. Of course, the rest of Parliament is on its recess. Mr Farage was for a couple of weeks, but he's here now, and he's making his bid to woo the voters.
Our biggest aspiration is that working people should not start to pay tax until they earn £20,000 a year. Lifting the two-child cap is the right thing to do. Not because we support a benefits culture, but because we believe for lower paid workers, this actually makes having children just a little bit easier for them. We would reverse, absolutely reverse, what has happened and we're taking away of the winter fuel allowance.
Well, time to get the calculator out. Challenged on how he would afford these policies, he said abolishing net zero, ending the cost of housing asylum seekers and abolishing diversity and inclusion initiatives could save a lot of cash.
If you add all that up, you've got a pretty eye-watering number of £350 billion. And whilst that may be, I accept, you know, slightly optimistic, because it's difficult always to cut everything, I think you can see very clearly the direction that we're going in.
Promises, promises. Do you remember Mary Poppins' promises like pie crust promises? Easy to make, easy to break. What is the reality? Duncan Weldon is an economist, former advisor on economic policy to the Labour Party, wrote the book 200 Years of Muddling Through. OK, sir, there's no shortage of economists saying the numbers don't add up. Where are you on this? Good morning to you.
Good morning, Nick. I'm afraid I'm also in team. They don't add up on this. The, you know, what Nigel Farage promised yesterday, it's no doubt very popular. Some of it, like getting rid of the two-child benefit cap, costs not very much, £3.5 billion, which is a big number, but it's not a big number
not in running a country,
the scale of the economy. But the really expensive one there was increasing the personal allowance. At the moment, you can earn about £12,500 before you pay any tax. Taking that up all the way to £20,000 would be hugely expensive, because the people that benefit aren't just those earning under £20,000. It's myself and you, Nick. You know, the first £20,000 of our earnings wouldn't be taxed. Everyone would benefit. If you look at the Treasury numbers on this, they reckon that every time you increase the personal allowance by £100, that costs the government about £1 billion. So, you know, you're talking roughly £10 billion per 1,000. That's about £80 billion a year that would cost. That's a, put this in context. When Liz Truss cut taxes at her budget, that was £30 billion of cuts in total. This is £80 billion for just one tax cut. It's a huge tax cut.
when you accept that a newspaper such as The Times, which is fairly neutral, it's not the Sun on one side and it's not the Mirror or the Guardian on the other, they're looking at, he's possibly at least 50 billion shy of his target. Is that a figure you could recognise, Duncan?
It is, yes, because we look at the cuts he said he was going to make. I mean, the DEI stuff, there's not very much of it. The really big cut he talked about was net zero. What he seems to have done with his net zero numbers is take all of the projected spending on net zero for the next 25 years and count it as one number, whereas these tax cuts, you've got to find the money for every single year. So out by about £50 billion seems about right to me.
Lastly, when the dust settles, Duncan, do you think he might have done his party a little bit of damage with this? Because it does at best seem to be rather naive schoolboy projections on costs.
It does to me as well. And I think, you know, people's first reaction is going to be, you know, getting more child benefit or, you know, paying a lot less tax is going to sound great. But, and, you know, at this time in the parliamentary, at this time in the political cycle, I think you can make these sorts of promises. But as you approach an election, as people start to think, do we actually want someone in charge whose sums don't seem to add up? I think it does quite a bit of damage.
Duncan, thanks for taking the call so early in the morning. Duncan Weldon's economist, former advisor on economic policy to the Labour Party and an author. The book is 200 Years of Muddling Through. 10 after 7 is the time. Let's bring in Mark Littlewood, who's director of popular conservatism, into the conversation. We know in the past that Nigel Farage has modelled himself on Margaret Thatcher. Do you think you'd have ever seen her signing off on economics such as these? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Good to be with you. No, probably not. It does look like Nigel Farage is acting in the way that nearly all other politicians act, in that you signal all of the nice, juicy giveaways and all of the wonderful things you're going to hand out to people, and you leave it a bit to the sort of subtext or the appendices to explain how you're going to pay for it. And that seems to be the case here. As your previous guest was saying, on the child benefit cap and restoring winter fuel allowance, that's not a huge part of the overall budget. That would amount to about 0.5% of total government spending. So you could probably do that. But the income tax position, if you were going to cut income tax to that dramatically, that is colossally expensive. I don't think he promised to do that in one fell swoop, actually. I think in his words, that sounded a bit more like a long-term aspiration that he might work his way towards after his third term in office, to give him credit. But I would say this, politicians of all stripes seem to me to be deluded about the fact that we can apparently keep spending money that we do not have. Mm. No government has balanced the books now since 2001, 25 consecutive years of spending beyond the means of taxpayers. And the truth is, we've got to find many more savings overall before we consider what more we want to spend on. And we need to find savings to the tune of tens of billions a year, possibly 100 billion a year or more. And politicians still seem to think, as soon as I've squirreled away a pound, saved a fiver, I've immediately got an idea how to spend it. In fact, we're going to have to make some savings without spending those savings if we're serious about the long-term fiscal position of Britain.
Mark, thanks for your input this morning. Mark Littlewood is Director of Popular Conservatism. Now, one of the most eye-catching challenges, perhaps, for Sir Keir Starmer was the idea that the two of them go for a pint at a working men's club in the so-called Red Wall area, Red Wall district. The Reform UK leader says his party is now more popular with the working class, a self-styled working class hero. Well, I decided to take him up on that, and we sent LBC's North East reporter Phoebe Abruzzese to Sedgefield, remember, former Tony Blair's constituency, Labour stronghold. Well, who would the good folk there rather have a pint with?
I've got a great idea. Why doesn't the Prime Minister and I go to a working man's club somewhere in the Red Wall, and we'll sit there and we'll let them ask us questions and you can all come along and cover it.
We're putting Nigel Farage's theory to the test here in County Durham, the heart of the Red Wall. But the once rock-solid Labour stronghold has seen political loyalties shift dramatically in recent years.
All heavy industry is gone. And despite promises to level up, nothing has happened.
These small mining towns have been pretty much left out of any levelling up system. I don't think there's been any money invested in the area.
Last week, close to 100 new councillors were sworn in Durham. Two-thirds of them were from Reform UK. So I've been to the Working Men's Club in Sedgefield, where Labour's most successful leader, Sir Tony Blair, represented for nearly 25 years. But Sir Keir Starmer isn't as popular.
We're a different culture up here. We are. Chalk and cheese. So when we have people like Starmer, who doesn't understand us, it's natural that people look around for other politicians.
When Labour got in, nothing gets done, and they keep putting policies through and then backturning on
them. I just think people have no other kind of choice, really.
This Labour Party is not a Labour Party. The man in charge doesn't know what a working person is. I would love to see Farage and him in a working men's club talking on the crucial issues that affect us, because I know there's only one person would come out of the corner at the end of that fight, smiling.
That sentiment, scepticism for Starmer's promises and a respect for Farage's straight talk, is one I heard a lot. If they did both come to Sedgefield Working Men's Club, who do you think people would take to better?
Nigel Farage.
Why do you think that?
Farage, he's more for the working class.
But in County Durham, I think people are disillusioned with Westminster, whether they're fans of reform or not.
I've seen too many come and go on, and as far as I'm concerned, most politicians, to me, they're mostly just driving a train. They're stuck on a track that they cannot really deviate from.
LBC's Phoebe Abrazzese reporting. So, Nigel Farage walks into your pub or your bar or coffee shop, it doesn't matter. What would you say to him? Nigel, would you like a pickled egg? Nigel, get out. Oh, thank God you're here. What would you say to Nigel Farage were you to bump into him in your pub or coffee shop or whatever it might be? In other news,
a car is believed to have followed an ambulance through a roadblock before driving into a crowd of people in Liverpool. I'm LBC's Liam Gossing with the latest.
It's 7:15, LBC News headlines, read by Thomas Watts.
The parents of a baby who died aged 15 weeks have told LBC they believe the mould in their home contributed to his death. Detectives have until lunchtime to question the suspect over the collision at Liverpool's trophy parade on Monday. Police and security chiefs have warned the early release of prisoners in England and Wales could pose a threat to public safety. LBC weather, sunny spells and showers for most, a high of 22 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Three problems on the M25 now. Firstly, on the Essex stretch clockwise, there are delays from junction 29 at the A127 to 30 at the A13. It's all down to an accident where two lanes are closed. Then clockwise, it's slow from junction 9 at Leatherhead to 10 at the A3 following an accident. And on the western stretch, there are delays clockwise at junction 15 at the M4. It's following an accident. All the lanes are open now, but it's still very slow. On the trains, Gatwick Express services are still suspended. It's all down to a signal failure, which means that Southern can't run via Peck and Rye, and Great Western Railway services aren't running between Bourne End and Marlow following a signal failure.
LBC.
With Little Plus Fruity Super Spin, simply shop and spin to win a free fresh fruit coupon with every shop. Download the Little Plus app to get by switching to the Retail Industry Awards Fresh Produce Retailer of the Year. 18 plus GB residents, various prizes available, subject to availability. Ends 4th of the 6/25. Full T's and C's apply. See little.co.uk/spin.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060 973. This is LBC.
It's your home, darling. Let's make it fabulous. High scoring isn't my forte, but there's no arguing with Trustpilot ratings. Shutterly Fabulous have an expert team of fitters who specialise in one thing, simply gorgeous window shutters. Made to measure, hand-finished and expertly installed. Make your home Shutterly Fabulous. So don't dither, darling. Book a free consultation with our expert shutter fitters today.
Big, big, big motoring world. Wow, wow, wow motoring world.
Yes, that's right. Big Motoring World is also Wow Motoring World because we price check our cars every day to guarantee you our best price, with up to 95% of them below market value. Big Motoring World, we're big on what matters to you. See website for nearest store. Visit bigmotoringworld.co.uk or one of our stores for our price promise and terms and conditions.
The British Red Cross is here to welcome people fleeing the conflict in Ukraine.
We're here to help people to safety when storms hit.
We're here to show anyone struggling that someone cares.
Hiya, that's a huge help.
We're here for humanity. With your support,
The Red Cross has helped millions of people in the UK and 190 other countries. Search British Red Cross to support us. Together, we are the world's emergency responders.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
I think I've started something. What would you say if Nigel Farage walked into your pub? I'm going to come to some of those reactions in a moment. This story is the front page of a couple of your newspapers. The Eye, Farage policies would risk a Truss mini-style budget. The other big story on the front pages are the developments, of course, of the Liverpool parade driver, and we'll give you a report from Liverpool in just a few moments. Daily Express, Liverpool car attacker was, quotes, high on drugs. This is, of course, something the police are working on, which is why they put it in quote marks. Exactly the same parade driver, high on drugs, is the front page of the Daily Mail and also the front page of the Daily Mirror, driver on drugs. I stress in quotation marks. To the websites and the LBC app. The LBC app has the story that public safety is at risk over the early release of prisoners. Let's pick one other at random, and it is The Independent. And there is the King and the Queen in Canada saying Canada faces a critical moment amid the threat from Trump. OK, Hugh, you're going to be the first caller. I just want to pick up on what you're saying. Here we are on some of the social media and text. Philip says, this is a man who makes £4.5 million. If he walked into a bar, I would leave. This is from David Murdoch. Why do you support a president in America who launched an attack on democracy? Terence Binion, if Nigel came into my cafe and ordered a bacon butty, I'd say red sauce, brown sauce, or no sauce at all. I don't quite get that one. Same subject. This is Darren in Blackpool. I'd tell him he's the biggest charlatan for working people. Jim's... I can't repeat. Let's just say that Jim suggests he should get out fairly quickly. All right, not a great welcome for Nigel in the Horse and Groom or the Star Cafe, whatever it might be. Hugh's in Battersea. What would you say, Hugh? Good morning.
Good morning.
Morning, sir.
Good morning, Nick. Well, I actually asked Nigel what he would do for our British veterans.
Ah, OK. Because remind everybody what you do. You are a part of a charity that works hard for our vets.
Well, we're not a charity.
I'm sorry, apologies.
Veterans are assets, not victims, Nick.
Sorry, I apologise. An organisation, I should have said. I hate myself and I think I'm going to die. What is it the organisation does exactly?
It's called We Served.
That's it.
And it's an online marketplace. Brilliant. That provides jobs, training, healthcare...
Fantastic.
Housing, everything a veteran and their family needs.
Well done, sir. More power to your elbow. So where did you find yourself? Did you say standing beside him? Was this in a pub or a train?
I was at a book launch, and right. he, the holy trinity of him, Richard Tice, and Sarah Putchin,
yes,
were stood next to me. So I turned to Nigel.
This is their new MP, sorry, just to explain. Yep. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, who won the Runcorn by-election by 6 votes. And I turned to Nigel and introduced myself and... told him what I did, and he said, brilliant. I want to introduce you to Sarah. And Sarah Poulton is from a military family herself.
Ah, right.
Her father served in Northern Ireland during the Troubles. And her opening maiden speech in the Commons stated her desire and Reform's desire to overturn the Northern Ireland Legacy Bill.
Ah.
Which, at the moment, there is a, what's it called, online, petition online.
Yep.
Which I last looked at 120,000 votes for support. And this was to, of course, stop government and ambulance-chasing lawyers chasing veterans who served in Northern Ireland during the 70s, 80s and 90s.
How did your conversation with Mr. Farage and the other two members, how did it end? What was the mood at the conclusion?
Well, actually, it resulted in an action because Sarah contacted me and has asked for further information. And we have 5.1 million veterans and their families in the UK, and we've just carried out a survey. And I see a lot of noise. We get a lot of commentary. Mm. And veterans typically aren't that political. They don't tend to like any politicians, really. We work for the sovereign. But the one thing they are really passionate about is this Northern Ireland legacy.
Yes, of course.
And how can we let, we can apologise to convicted terrorists and murderers, let them out, and then go after men in their 70s, 80s and 90s.
So lastly, have you had the follow-up with the new
Yes.
MP?
And yes.
What did you take from that?
I took that it was someone who was highly principled.
Okay.
and was absolutely adamant this is what they were going to do, and would like, you know, and just wants to stay in touch to listen to what veterans want.
Lastly, I'm not asking you which way you vote, but as a result of your meeting with those three and the action, the interaction that you've had, are you more likely, less likely, or the same to consider voting reform the next time you have an opportunity?
I'm in a position, Nick, where I have to remain apolitical, and my get-out clause is I work for the sovereign, and whoever the sovereign appoints, that's who we work for.
Nice answer. Hugh, good luck with your organisation, and thank you for your input. 7:24. A couple more from the social media. Stephen in Toronto. Oh, it's all happening over there, Stephen. Look after our king and queen. We'll have them back shortly. Says the best part of Farage's speech was when he got found out by himself challenging the Prime Minister to debate in a mining town to see if Starmer could enjoy a drink with the lads and watch Channel 4 racing. Channel 4 haven't had the race since 2016. Is that well done, Stephen? That's very good. Graham in Sussex, I can't imagine any reform politician or councillor walking to my local pub. It's a gay bar full of very diverse communities. I don't know that that's necessarily fair. I know that some of the people involved in reform are gay themselves, and that might be a little unfair, but Graham, thank you for your input. Albert says, I personally wouldn't want to sit down and have a drink with either of them. They both pretend to be working class, but in reality, a good day's work would kill them, says Albert in Croydon. And let's do one last one. This comes in from... You haven't signed. Here we are. This comes in from James in Bromley. If someone's thinking of voting reform based on Nigel Farage's mathematics, can you get them to contact me, please? I've some magic beans to sell them. 7:25. Now, when I went through the front pages for you this morning, I said that this is on a couple of them, but most of them, understandably following up the aftermath of the horror in Liverpool, and suggestions now from Merseyside Police, of course, who've concluded their first full day of investigation. So let's go to LBC's reporter in Liverpool, Liam Gotting, for the latest. Liam.
Good morning, Nick. Yeah, we learned some more details yesterday, including the fact that the 53-year-old man arrested at the scene is being questioned by Merseyside police on suspicion of attempted murder, dangerous driving, and driving while unfit through drugs. Now, there was a press conference that was led by Merseyside Police's Assistant Chief Constable Jenny Sims, where she described the atmosphere of the parade as electric, but said, sadly, the joy of the day dissipated. She told us about a robust traffic management plan that was in place, designed by Merseyside Police and the event organisers. Here is the Assistant Chief Constable explaining how the car that drove into the crowd ended up on Water Street.
It is believed the driver of the Ford Galaxy car involved in this incident was able to follow an ambulance onto Water Street after the roadblock was temporarily lifted, so that the ambulance crew could attend to a member of the public who was having a suspected heart attack. As with many large events, with event organisers, we plan for all contingencies, and this included the implementation of road closures to protect pedestrians.
Well, she also reiterated that this is not being treated as terrorism and urged people not to speculate online, not to spread misinformation, and not to share the videos that we've all seen circulating on social media as well. Earlier in the day, Liverpool's Mayor Steve Rotherham criticised those who have been spreading misinformation on social media.
We're human beings and we're curious, aren't we, about how those things have come about. But that has to be separated from those people who want to use what happened for nefarious reasons. The genuine questions will be answered once the full investigation is concluded by the police. I think that's fine asking those questions. What we obviously don't need are people to be involved in this sort of the speculation about what it might have been about, because we don't know.
And Nick, we also got an update on the amount of people who were treated in hospital. Now, yesterday when we spoke, we were reporting that number to be 27, but actually a bit of a jump from that day, because yesterday we found out that 50 people in total were taken to hospital after the incident. 11 currently remain there, but the good news is that according to Merseyside Police, everyone is on the mend and are recovering well. They concluded yesterday's press conference by saying the exact circumstances of the incident are still being investigated, and they're now going through CCTV to determine the movements of the car before it supposedly followed that ambulance through the roadblock.
Liam Godding reporting, 7:28. I'm asking you, after that challenge from Nigel Farage yesterday, if he was to walk into the pub or the coffee shop where you were, what would you say to him? Charlie Stone in Bury said, I met him and Richard Tice, who of course is the deputy leader, in a working men's club. The atmosphere was vibrant, enthusiastic and full of hope. Here's something for you. Current membership of UKIP, 235,421. That's up 1,000 a week, says Mr. Stone. What's the figures for the other three down? So someone is buying the message. I don't know whether Mr. Stone has actually checked all the figures, but I suppose it does kind of fit with the narrative. Cy in York, I would ask Nigel Farage, why have you broken my country? What have you ever done that's had a tangible positive outcome for this country, says Cy. All right, keep him coming on that. Now, coming up after the news to London, where congestion charge, so controversial when it was brought in all those years ago, is to go up by 20%. Have you said I hadn't suddenly had a 20% lift in your pay? I bet you haven't. This, as official figures show, that London is now the fifth most congested city in the world for traffic. The fifth in the world, obviously number one in Europe. By the way, what's in first place? You have to stay tuned to find out. But I'll be making the argument the reason it is so bad is because they've taken so much of the carriageways away in London. Roads such as Hyde Park and others now, in some instances, it's just one track, and they wonder why traffic can't move. The utter incompetence of those people. That's later in the show. And also after the news, a very powerful LBC exclusive.
The parents of a baby boy who died aged 15 weeks have told LBC they believe mould in their flat contributed to his death. I'm LBC's Helen Hoddenott with the exclusive.
A story you cannot afford to miss. 7.30, you'll listen to Breakfast with me, Nick Ferrara, here on LBC. Let's get the news headlines then. Thomas Watts.
As you've been hearing, the parents of a boy who died aged 15 weeks have told LBC they believe the mould in their home contributed to his death. Akram had been living in a London flat deemed uninhabitable by an independent survey. Notting Hill Genesis, which managed the property, says it's working with relevant authorities ahead of the inquest in August. Police have until lunchtime to question a suspect over the collision at Liverpool's Premier League trophy parade. 11 people remain in hospital after a car ploughed into crowds on Monday evening. Thames Water has been fined more than £120 million following two investigations by the regulator of Watt. It's the largest penalty the watchdog has ever issued. LBC weather, sunny spells and showers for most, a high of 22 degrees.
This is LBC.
I've had a few. Jimmy was my first. He was gorgeous and gave me so much space. Then there was Lorenzo. He was exciting, but also reliable. Elvis is my latest. I love him the most. He makes me feel so warm with his heated seats and steering wheel. It might sound strange to love a car and name them, but it's not just me. Almost every Honda Jazz owner stays with the Jazz and buys another. True love starts with a test drive. Honda, the power of dreams.
The Red Cross is here to deliver essentials to people who have lost everything in Ukraine.
We are here to support families enduring the food crisis in Somalia.
We're here to shelter earthquake survivors in Turkey and Syria.
We're here for humanity. With your support, the Red Cross has helped millions of people in the UK and 190 other countries. Search British Red Cross to support us. Together, we are the world's emergency responders.
Here, Sandra, listen to this email. Felicitations and unalloyed joy to you. Could you help with a small inconvenience? I possess $32 million in an account belonging to my father, the Prince. We need an honest person to bank this amount for us. We're quits in, babe.
Some things are too good to be true. The Specsavers Too Good deal isn't. Get two pairs of glasses for £70. Include single vision lenses to the same prescription. Conditions apply. Ask in store for details.
Quits in!
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060 973.
7.32, I'm chuckling away. I've started something here. What would you say if Nigel Farage walked into your pub? Sadly, many of the suggestions I can't actually read out, but they're keeping me amused on a rather damp Wednesday morning, so thank you. Talking about damp, let's talk water. Let's bring Christian May, Editor-in-Chief at City AM, to a bit more comment on the story we've just heard on the LBC News headlines. A whopping fine for Thames Water. Remind the listeners the amount and what's behind that. Christian, good morning.
Good morning to you, Nick. Yes, a major announcement to the Stock Exchange this morning. Ofwat, the regulator, has said that Thames Water will pay £104 million fine for breaching wastewater regulations, the largest fine imposed by the watchdog, and another 20 million quid or just under for breaking rules relating to the company's dividend payments. They've stressed that this fine will be paid by the company and its investors and not customers. I've just got the full statement here through from the chief executive of Ofwat, who says this is a clear-cut case where Thames Water let down customers and failed to protect the environment. It goes on to say that dividend payments must be linked to performance and environmental standards, something which hasn't happened. And he notes that as the company is seeking new buyers to fund its turnaround, he very much hopes that this serves as an opportunity to break with the past.
You mentioned dividend payments. Sorry, Christian, pardon my ignorance. Can Ofwat mandate that, or is that just a recommendation and an urging, as it were?
So they have levied this fine on the basis that their rules in the regulated, highly regulated sector say that there must be a clear link between dividends and company performance and environmental standards. Now, Thames paid out about 160 million quid in dividends to shareholders around this time last year, something that at the time, Ofwat said, breached what's called its licence condition P30, if you want to get into the details. This, I assume, is the conclusion of that investigation.
Let's go to the front page of City AM, and there's alarm in the world of retail. Why?
I'm afraid we've talked about this a lot, haven't we? But it's hugely important because the retail sector is vital. It provides an enormous number of jobs, particularly flexible work and people just entering the world of work. And they are really suffering from a combination of factors, not least the tax increases, the minimum wage increases, future employment law regulations, and indeed uncertainty relating to the economy and the trade war. The headline is that the sector is now at its most pessimistic for its own prospects, according to the CBI, since the COVID pandemic. There's now an alarming percentage of big employers in the sector who say they'll be reducing headcount in the months ahead and that costs are going to have to increase further. They have to contend with a range of new taxes and regulations. They say the sector is already vulnerable and there's some very difficult choices ahead.
From the front page of City AM, we go into the pages of the Times newspaper in an investigation that has the headline Payouts and Debt Cuts Totalling £19 million Over Force-Fitted Meters. Just remind listeners, what is a force-fitted meter and how do we get to this sum? Christian?
Yeah, the Times did an extraordinary investigation a while back, which made headlines everywhere else, quite rightly so, of energy companies who were forcing, often under warrants, their way into the homes of people who were not keeping up with their energy payments and force-fitting prepayment meters, which, if they ran out, would leave the home without access to electricity. An awful lot of the homes that they forced their way into were belonging to very vulnerable people, elderly, ill, people with mental health conditions. And another regulator, we've just talked about Ofwat, this time it's Ofgem, the energy regulator, has come down hard on a number of companies and agreed that about 40,000 affected customers will now either receive compensation or will have their debt cancelled. I'm just looking at the list of companies this does apply to. Customers including those among Scottish Power, EDF, E.ON, Octopus, Utility Warehouse, Good Energy, True Energy and Ecotricity, but not British Gas, which was deemed to be perhaps the worst offender and is under its own investigation. So quite a breakthrough there for those that were affected by what was at the time quite rightly deemed to be something of a scandal.
OK, finally into the motor sector, or Wemotor into the motor sector. Toyota plans to expand its car production in the UK. One newspaper, the Daily Mail, says this is a Brexit boost. Is it, or is it down to Donald Trump's trade war, or perhaps a bit of both? Christian?
Well, I think there are a number of reasons for it. So Toyota is planning to move some of the production for its Corolla sports models into the UK to take advantage, the company says, of excess capacity here. So that's good news. It's also the case that tariffs on cars to the UK are considerably lower. Sorry, tariffs on cars from the UK to the US are considerably lower than those that are currently imposed on cars direct from Japan, although Japan is currently trying to negotiate its way down from those 25% tariffs that the US imposed. We keep a very close eye on car manufacturing data and figures in the UK because it goes up and down. I mean, actually, it's an extraordinary amount of fluidity, if you like, in this sector. They can turn production on and off quite quickly, and of course that has impact on jobs and the wider economy. So this is a little bit of good news for an increase in the investment and skilled workforce in Derbyshire.
We'll finish on a positive. My thanks, Christian May, Editor-in-Chief at City AM. The time's 7:38. What would you say to Nigel Farage if he walked into your pub or coffee shop? Michelle, you'll be the next caller. Stuart in Sheffield, I'd ask him when was the last time he went to a football match, and then who's going to be in your shadow cabinet? It's those I want to scrutinise. Rob says, I met Nigel Farage while working in a wine store. Funnily enough, he didn't buy a single bottle of English wine, all European plonk. David says, if Nigel walked into my pub, I'd tell him he'd have my vote as long as he gets Ben Wallace to be his defence secretary. Ben Wallace was a soldier for soldiers in my eyes, a very rare politician. Michelle's in Birmingham. In walks Nigel Farage to your coffee shop or your bar or whatever. What would you say? Morning, Michelle.
Morning, Nick. I would ask him or Keir, when was the last time they did their weekly shop at a budget supermarket?
Okay. You know, tell me why. What do you get? I think I know where you're going with this. Tell me why.
Well, neither of them, whether they started from working class backgrounds, they probably both did, but neither of them are that now. And to me, to have some sort of relationship with the people, you've got to like live as the people have lived. And so, you know, shopping at a budget supermarket would be...
Well, I think, have to say, Nigel Farage was private school educated and his father was in the city. So Keir, his father was, I think, a toolmaker and his mother was a nurse. So there's possibly a disparity there. Michelle, why is it important to you that people go to Budget or Aldi or Lidl?
Well, I think, to be honest, in the cost of living now, it makes you really think about every penny that you're spending. So, you know, you've got to be able to sort of make that money stretch as far as you can. And I just don't think that they have that understanding of that. And Nigel does a very good talk about, you know, he's a man of the people, but he really isn't a man of the people. And I don't think people are really understanding that. You know, he talks the talk, but he doesn't walk the walk of the normal person.
And that's why you want to know where he shops. Great question, Michelle. Have yourself a good day. Oh, have they cleared the bins yet, Michelle?
No, I'm just looking at my bins right now and they're still up. They're overflowing again.
What are you doing?
I mean,
how do you cope, my love?
Oh, it's a nightmare. They're coming every sort of three, 4 weeks now. So, yeah, it's all built back up again. So, yeah.
Oh, I hope it goes. That's horrific. I mean, it's just such a health risk. Michelle, we are thinking of you. Sorry. The second city and we can't clear the bins. Look after yourself, Michelle. Jamie's in Clacton, appropriately enough, so he could walk into... What pub do you use in Clacton? Let's put it that way, Jamie.
Well, actually, I don't use many at all. I mean, I go there to eat more than to drink.
Oh, right. Okay.
But there's a nice place called the Wick Lodge down near where I live.
Okay. And he walks into the Wick Lodge or whatever else. What would you say? What would you ask him? How would you react?
Well, I mean, I'd be more tempted to walk out if for our attention, to be honest.
Okay.
I mean, it's because I think that he's... I just don't like the lies. Why can't people see through what he's trying to do, which is...
What is he trying? Tell me what he's... Go on, yep.
So he just says... He just seems to say whatever he wants to get people on his side, and then he doesn't follow through on these things. There's no reasoning behind it. There's no... logic, there's no maths, as we've seen, behind what he says, and it just doesn't add up. And people fall for it, hook, line and sinker, and it just confuses me.
Jamie, if I was to, and I might have asked you this before, but if I was to stop 10 people in Clacton and say, what sort of job do you think your local MP is doing? Bear in mind, this is live radio, so please mind your language. What am I going to hear?
I think the thing is that there'd be probably five or six of those people, maybe even more, would say that he's doing a good job, but for the country, not for the constituency, because all they believe in is whatever they're told by him, which is that there's, you know, this massive influx of immigrants, which there is a problem, you know, he makes it out to be like there's one on every street corner, and realistically, if you walk around Clacton, you'd be hard put to see one over the course of about 3 days.
Look after yourself. Please stay in touch. I want to hear how it gets on in Clacton. Will you be my Clacton correspondent, Jamie?
Sure.
Seriously, I'm signing up as my Clacton correspondent. We got a deal?
Yeah, no problem at all.
Hired, which I think is the exact opposite of what Alan Sugar says. But you're hired. Jamie, talk to me regularly. Thank you. 7:42. Let's go elsewhere. Let's go to the United States. President Trump.
Part of the problem with Harvard is that there are about 31%, almost 31% of foreigners coming to Harvard. We have Americans that want to go there, and they can't go there because you have 31% foreign. Now, no foreign government contributes money to Harvard. We do.
Now, it's not for me to opine on what this means for American students, but what does it mean for British students who want to go there? Thomas Scotto is Professor of Politics at the University of Strathclyde and joins me now. So what does it mean for young or students, British students who want to go there, Professor? Good morning.
Well, hi, good morning. I think it'll be very difficult. They'll experience long waits at embassies for visa clearances, even though, you know, they have nothing but a desire to go to the United States for an education. Part of the way, I think, a part of a strategy to weaken, you know, elite universities of the Trump administration, which they see as Vice President J.D. Vance said, the professors are the enemy. And this is sort of part of a strategy, I think, that they're doing. I think this is a golden opportunity for the United Kingdom to take talent, frankly.
Did you say the professors are the enemy? This is like the days of Pol Pot, isn't it?
Well, I mean, you know, this is sort of from a playbook that, you know, a lot of the opposition traditionally to these types of movements, you look at Hungary, you look at, you know, you can look at movements from the left or the right. They, you know, their desires are to weaken, you know, the institutions that may put up resistance and, you know, the sort of brain trust at Harvard. Of course, the long-term damage is not just to sort of politics. It's to the, you know, to the, you know, Boston is a massive, massive science innovation area that is fueled by not just Harvard, but by another university, you know, MIT, and the billions and billions
of
pounds.
Massachusetts Institute of Technology just took.
Yes, yep, apologies.
No, that's my job. Go ahead, Professor. Go ahead. Yep.
So you know, so you have direct investment of students coming in and, you know, spending money on food and lodging and whatever of in the billions and pounds, and then you have you know, the fact that many of the most innovative stay. You know, one Elon Musk, I should say, right?
So yeah. Here's the thing: we're talking about the economic literacy of a prominent UK politician, Nigel Farage. And I read over in your homeland, in the United States, students generated $43.8 billion through tuition, housing, that I'll call it $44 billion. Can I question the economic literacy of the president, lastly, Professor?
You know, I don't know if that's what's overriding, I think, their decision-making here is a desire to sort of stomp out the opposite, I think, to stomp out the opposition, frankly. And it's not, I mean, the interesting thing is not just Harvard, right? Like, so one of the universities with the largest international enrollments, let's say, is Purdue. Purdue is in Indiana, which is a huge red state. You know, I mean, that's going to be interesting, right? They're taking down areas. The effects of this is not just, right, if you're an international student, let's say you're not going to Harvard, right, but you're saying, well, I'd like to I fancy studying in America, and I'm looking at, let's say, Vanderbilt in Tennessee, right? What are you saying now? Do I really want to go to a world where, you know, my social media is going to be peeked at by some immigration bureaucrat? You know, I have nothing to do with I have no interest in, like, the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. I'm an 18-year-old kid. I really like Vanderbilt's sports teams. You know, I've grown up watching Duke basketball on TV. This is why I wanted to come to the United States, and I'm obsessed with American pop culture. But is this really worth it? And if you're a parent of a 17- and 18-year-old kid right now, what do you do, you know? What are you saying? You're saying, is this really, you know, this kid's a little young to get, you know, caught up in the geopolitics of the world.
I will leave it there. Hey, Professor, thank you. We'll talk again. I've enjoyed our time together. Thomas Scotto is Professor of Politics at the University of Strathclyde. Coming up after the news, taking a bonfire to red tape over building proposals. Yes, we seem to have heard it before, but it's another initiative. 7:46 now, LBC News headlines from Thomas Watts.
The parents of a baby who died aged 15 weeks have told LBC they believe the mould in their home contributed to his death. A driver remains in custody after he was arrested on suspicion of attempted murder at Liverpool's trophy parade. And Thames Water has been fined more than £120 million in Ofwat's largest ever penalty. LBC weather. Sunny spells and showers for most places, a high of 22 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Lots of problems still on the M25. Clockwise queues from Junction 29 at the A127 to Junction 30 at the A13. It's all down to an accident where two lanes are closed. Also, clockwise, it's slow from Junction 9 at Leatherhead to 10 at the A3 following an accident. And also, clockwise, it's slow all the way from Junction 13 at Staines to 15 at the M4 following an accident. But all the lanes are now back open. On the train, still no Gatwick Express services. It's all down to a signal failure, which also means that southern trains aren't running via Peck and Rye, so that's between London Bridge and East Croydon, and Great Western Railway services aren't running between Bourne End and Marlow, and that's also following a signal failure.
This is LBC.
Looking
looking for a fixed passive income backed by real demand? With ulezprosperity.com, you buy the car, we rent it from you for a set period. You stay the legal owner and we pay you up to £600 per month in fixed rental income. No hassle, no maintenance, no tenants. It's a straightforward asset-backed rental agreement. Visit ulezprosperity.com for conditions and to learn more. That's ulezprosperity.com. Simple, steady, secure.
This is LBC. Listen on Global Player or the new LBC app. Download it from your app store now.
I've had a few. Jimmy was my first. He was gorgeous and gave me so much space. Then there was Lorenzo. He was exciting, but also reliable. Elvis is my latest. I love him the most. He makes me feel so warm with his heated seats and steering wheel. It might sound strange to love a car and name them, but it's not just me. Almost every Honda Jazz owner stays with the Jazz and buys another. True love starts with a test drive. Honda, the power of dreams.
At Halfords, we want you to say yes to packing more into summer days with a great value roof box or bike rack. Say yes to freewheeling fun with bikes and gear for all the family. Say yes to a perfectly polished car with our range of car cleaning products. And say yes to easy breezy trips with a free aircon check. Our experts are on hand with checks, advice and fitting. So pop into your local store or shop online and say yes to summer at Halfords. Subject to availability, see halfords.com for full T's and C's.
With over 50 years' experience at Fidelity, we believe there's a difference between investing and being invested. Investing is having access to guidance, tools and expert insights. Being invested means feeling confident about your future. Investing is choosing from a wealth of investment options. Being invested means focusing on your long-term goals. For ISAs, pensions or advice, be truly invested with Fidelity. Go to fidelity.co.uk. Your capital is at risk. Terms apply.
There's not many things as epic as jumping over a volcano in a monster truck or even swinging over a crocodile-infested river. But 15% off when you spend £15 at Mackey's comes pretty close. Deal drop. Download the app to redeem all week. 18 plus app only. One use per week until the 1st of June. Minimum spend and discount only applies to food and drink. Fees apply to delivery. Participation varies. T's and C's apply.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
It's 10 minutes before 8. Now, while there's no shortage of ambitious targets for the government for the plan for change, perhaps one of the most eye-catching is the number of homes they want to build up to the end of this decade. It's a very, very ambitious target. Has to be said, previous administrations have failed, but there is a determination, so there's new regulations or new drive on the way. Let's put some of that to Labour MP and Housing and Planning Minister Matthew Pennycook. Good to have you on again, Minister. So what is it we're going to try and streamline or take a red pen to today? Good morning.
Morning, Nick. Always a pleasure. We are announcing today as part of our plan for change a package of measures designed to streamline the planning system and unleash small and medium-sized house builders. We inherited, as you know, a housing system that's failing to produce the number of homes we need of all tenures. And part of the reason that the housing system is broken is because we're overly reliant on a small number of large volume house builders. And they obviously have a huge contribution to make, but we need to diversify the housing market. We need to get SME builders back in the game. In the 80s, they used to produce about 40% of houses. It's under 10% today.
Good Lord.
So the package we're introducing today involves a number of targeted changes, allocating more land specifically to SME house builders, providing them with additional financial support, and easing the regulatory burden on them in a number of areas. And we think this will help, as I say, get SMEs back in the game, level the playing field. They build out sites far faster than larger sites, so they're making a direct contribution to that 1.5. In fact, we couldn't get to the 1.5 million homes target without their contribution expanding, and they benefit local economies.
And this is your belief that this precipitate drop has been fuelled by the measures you're trying to tackle with your colleagues now?
Well, the decline in SME house builders over recent decades, there's a number of factors to that, but what we know is that in every housing downturn, more and more SME house builders get squeezed out, and the housing system as a whole becomes more homogenous. So we've got to diversify it. We've got to bring a number of players into it. SMEs are one of those, alongside, for example, local authorities. We need council house building rates increasing, but we've absolutely got to get SMEs back in the game. We think this package goes a long way to doing that in terms of ensuring they have access to land, access to finance, and we're levelling the playing field in terms of the regulatory burden. Because at the moment, Nick, if you bring forward a site that's got seven homes on it, you face all the same hurdles as a site with 500 homes, and it keeps SME house builders locked out. So it's part and parcel of ensuring they can make a much bigger contribution to that 1.5 million home target as part of our plan for change.
Got it. So just in terms of reference then, Minister, what constitutes an SME builder? It's the number of houses he or she builds, is it, on each side?
It's the size of the company, and what we're talking about here is some pretty medium-sized house builders, but lots and lots of very small house builders, lots of whom are just really clinging on by their fingernails because they can't access finance, they can't find appropriate land to build out on, and when they do, they often face, as a result of the nature of the planning system that we've inherited as it's currently constituted, although we're, as you say, working at pace to change that, lots and lots of hurdles that just mean it is impossible to get their schemes up and running. But we know where they do build, they build out quicker, they build out in ways that local communities value and appreciate, different styles, local brick, etc. So they've got a huge contribution to make in terms of, you know, that adding to the local economy and getting to the homes we need delivered in all parts of the country.
Well, as I said, it's very ambitious. It's just, we do seem to have heard some of this before, Minister. In August 2024, Angela Rayner said we'd unblock red tape holding up 300,000 new homes. In November 2024, the government said it would remove red tape and provide funding to boost heat pumps to grow the number of houses. January this year, Rachel Reeves says housing and infrastructure red tape will be cut to kickstart the economy. March, radical plan to cut red tape. May, Angela Rayner, cut red tape to get spades in the ground. That's now six assertions. What results have we had from this?
Well, we are seeing, I mean, you will understand, Nick, and I know your viewers will, that in terms of the statistics, there is a real lag between the numbers coming through and when they start to...
We're hearing the same thing. Are we building more houses as a result of these six different initiatives I've just mentioned?
Well, we are still facing, it was the point I was going to make, we are still seeing in the statistics, and this will change, we're seeing green shoots, I'll come on to the point, but we're still seeing the statistics. For example, so the last full year of net additional completions I have is 2023-24, 221,000 homes. That is not high enough. I expect the figures for 2024-25 will still not be high enough, but that reflects those anti-supply decisions made by the previous Tory government, including the abolition of mandatory housing targets. The changes we have made, a series of changes, of which this builds on them, this is just another part of the jigsaw that needs to be put in place in terms of easing and streamlining regulation where appropriate, but also taking other measures, the grant funding we've put into social and affordable homes, all the other changes we've done. We will see that coming through in terms of applications in fairly short order. So we are turning things around. But the reason why we have picked a 1.5 million new homes target as part of our plan for change over the Parliament rather than an annual figure is because we inherited a dire situation. It's going to take time to turn it around. So it won't be reflected in the figures today. It will start to come through, and there are real green shoots. Let me give you one example. The changes we made on low-quality grey belt land as part of our different approach to green belt land release and development.
Yeah.
We are seeing grey belt applications come through in fairly significant numbers. This is anecdotally at the moment. The statistics will reflect it, I'm sure. And as you all know, don't take it from me, the OBR scored planning reform as a 6.8 billion addition to the economy, 0.2% of GDP, the most impactful pro-growth measure that's a zero-cost policy ever. So planning reform is working, but today is another part of that jigsaw, as I say, specifically focused on unleashing SME house builders, because we need them back in the game to meet that target.
Minister, a couple of other housing issues I'd like to explore with you, one of which I think your team have made you aware, an LBC exclusive, the tragic story of a 15-week-old baby whose death, his family says, was at least in part due to the appalling conditions at their mould-ridden flat. Now, an inquest for the baby will take place in August. His family, though, are calling on the government to speed up the implementation of Awab's law. That was, of course, Awab Ishak. I need to remind listeners, this was not under the Labour administration, who died in 2020. As things stand, families won't benefit from the law's protection until 2027. Minister, why the delay?
That's not actually correct, Nick, in terms of that people won't feel the benefits until 2027. But let me just say on the case, it was absolutely devastating, heartbreaking tragedy. Everyone deserves to live in a decent, safe, secure and affordable home. That is the government's mission that underpins all of the reforms we're making on house building. I understand why you've raised the case. I understand why listeners will want more details. It would be inappropriate for me to comment on it until we have the coroner's final report.
But I understood in February, social landlords were given a 2-year grace period, Minister, to the heart of
No, that's not true.
Go ahead.
What we have done with in terms of Awab's law, which is a law, as you say, which came out of the untimely death of Awab Ishak, from respiratory failure as a result of dampened mould in his Rochdale home. Mm-hmm. And that tragedy is an absolute stain on the nation, and we can never let it happen again. We must take action to do this. What we talk about in terms of introducing Awab's law is taking a phased approach to ensure that social landlords can introduce it in a way that doesn't harm tenants. If social landlords fell over and all of their repair systems were put over, that wouldn't be good for tenants. People will see, though, we're laying the regulations soon. Awab's law will apply to emergency hazards and dampened mould from October this year.
Oh.
In terms of 2027, that's when every hazard encompassed by Awab's law.
So it's the gravity of the hazard we're talking about. This is the key here, isn't it?
Absolutely. And I think it would be understandable, we are targeting the most severe hazards in the first phase, if you like. And the way we are introducing this will actually allow us to apply Awab's law to dampen mould earlier than would otherwise have been the case by ensuring it comes in October as a standard. So we are taking action.
I'm sorry if I alongside, got that from Shelter, just to explain where I got that from. So I'm sorry
but
to
it's, misled and Shelter know full well the sequencing approach that we're taking forward. But I should say, Nick, Awab's law is not the only thing we're doing. So we're consulting on a revised decent home standard for both social and private rented sector homes this year. We're introducing, for example, electrical safety checks for social landlords, a requirement, competence and conduct standards for staff in social housing. So alongside, and I think it's just the main point I'd like to stress is, alongside boosting housing supply, alongside delivering that biggest increase in social and affordable house building in a generation, this government and me and the Deputy Prime Minister are absolutely committed to driving a transformational and lasting change in the quality and safety of homes of all tenures.
Let's finish with another of your senior colleagues, Ed Miliband, and the news that landlords will be able to pass on the cost of upgrading energy efficiency of rental properties to tenants, these net zero rules overseen by your colleague, Ed Miliband. Are you comfortable with that, tenants having to pay this?
Well, we do want to see landlords increase the energy efficiency of their properties.
Are the tenants to pay consulted for it, Mr. Pennycook?
Well, what I'd say on that, I don't sort of recognise the way that's been framed. What I would say is that the Renters' Rights Bill that we've introduced, that is going through Parliament at this moment, it's in the Lords, it's coming back to the Commons hopefully soon.